The front page of the money section of the November 30, 2001 issue of USA Today has a large color photograph of a 58-year-old man. His hair is gray, his arms are crossed, he is intelligent and distinguished looking. Although he could pass as the CEO of a large corporation, he isn't. Instead, he is a loyal employee of Enron, a company where the CEO and the other top executives may have personally made millions of dollars, but the company is now bankrupt. The reason this man is on the cover and not the CEO is because this loyal employee's 401k has been devastated due to the stock market crash, a down economy, and the downfall of the company he spent a lifetime working for. At one time, his company's stock was worth nearly $100 per share. This loyal employee felt rich and bought more and more shares of the company he worked for and put those shares into his retirement plan. On November 30, 2001, that same company stock was worth less than 35 cents per share and falling. At one time, his 401k was worth $317,000, and today he estimates it's worth to be about $100,000. It is beginning to dawn on him that he may never be able to retire. He is nearly out of his most important asset, time. Some 25 years after the passage of ERISA, Rich Dad's prophecy is starting to come true. The December 2, 2001 edition of the Miami Herald ran a headline calling for government reform of 401k retirement plans. The journalist who wrote the piece argued that we have laws requiring people to wear seatbelts in cars, but we don't have laws requiring investors to invest wisely. Soon thereafter, every newspaper, television, and radio station were shouting words of outrage. How could the government let this happen? One local broadcaster shouted over the radio. Why didn't the accounting firm of Arthur Anderson warn the shareholders? How can the senior management of Enron run off with hundreds of millions of dollars and leave the employees with nothing? I finally heard a voice of reason say on a television news release, "While Enron is an extreme case, it is not an isolated case. What about all the millions of employees who have lost billions of dollars in their retirement plans? What about the employees working for hundreds of other companies who may not have lost everything, but have lost years of retirement savings in the stock market? How do they feel now, knowing that their dreams of retirement may never come true? Do they feel more trust to the stock market or less trust today? The lack of confidence among investors is growing and is the bigger problem. There is more to this problem than simply Enron and questionable accounting." In response, a few stations had financial planners repeat the standard company line. This problem would not have happened if the employees had diversified. Another famous mutual fund manager came on and said, "We have always advised our clients to diversify. Why didn't the management of Enron advise their employees to diversify their portfolios? If they had diversified, they would not have the problems they are having today." If Rich Dad were asked, he too would agree that Enron was an extreme case. But he would also know that it is not an isolated case. In the last few years, not only did Enron employees take sizable losses, but so did employees of Ford, Cisco, Coca-Cola, United Airlines, and on and on. If Rich Dad were asked to comment on the plight of the Enron employees, and all employees who have money in the stock market, he might say, "The problem is not the lack of diversification. The problem is a lack of financial education and financial sophistication, flaws that simple diversification alone cannot solve." News of Enron and the questionable accounting of Arthur Anderson burst into the headlines. During all this media sensationalism, the public often misses the more important points, because the real problems are not front-page news. During this meltdown period of Enron, one of the many flaws in ERISA was brought to light in that same December 2, 2001 edition of the Miami Herald. To me, more important than the Enron fiasco is the simple question that this retiree asks of a certified financial planner who regularly contributes to the paper. The question was, "I am 70 years old and retired, hoping that my IRA would sustain me when the time came. Since I have to begin withdrawing next year, I would appreciate your advice. I was advised several years ago to invest my IRA in mutual funds. For a while it was great, but along with so many other people, I have lost a great deal in the last 2 years. Should I take my losses and reinvest in a secure savings, even though the interest rates are low?" The answer: if ever there was a time to stick with the plan, it's now. The ups and downs of the market are to be expected, and if you've been an investor for more than a few years, you've ridden a few waves yourself, mostly up markets, just no down markets this long and nasty. I feel your pain, but 2% CDs and no growth aren't going to cut it. Check your mutual funds and make sure they're solid and leaning more to the conservative growth and growth income funds. Aggressive funds tend to be more volatile. Instruct your custodian to send you your required minimum distribution monthly by selling shares of your funds. This is called a systematic withdrawal, and it works like a charm. Did you pick up one of the flaws in the 1974 law? Did you notice the statement by the 70-year-old retiree who wrote, "Since I have to begin withdrawing next year, I would appreciate your advice"? Did you notice the response from the financial planner? Instruct your custodian to send you your required minimum distribution monthly by selling shares of your funds. While most of the world was sipping their coffee and reading about Enron and thinking Enron's problems are not their problems, this retiree's simple question points out how Enron is everyone's problem. One of the flaws that Rich Dad noticed 20 years earlier was the requirement that the retiree must begin withdrawing from the market by selling shares monthly at age 70 and a half. In other words, as the years go on, more and more people will, by law, be required to withdraw by selling shares, while younger workers are required to buy shares. Now, it does not take a rocket scientist to see the flaw in this plan, a flaw that will get bigger and bigger as more and more people get older. In other words, how does the price of a stock go up when more people are selling than buying? The question is more important simply because of the numbers of people involved. In one way or another, this 70-year-old retiree's question will affect tens of millions of people, maybe hundreds of millions, just because of its ripple effect. When the December 2, 2001 issue of the Miami Herald ran, the retiree's question had little impact simply because at the present time, relatively few people are over 70, and less than half have DC pension plans. Most still have DB pensions, which operate via different rules. Also, many of those born before 1946 had good-paying jobs, made money on their home they sold at a high price to a baby boomer, and many actually had savings. So the question this retiree asks is shoved to a back page, yet it is a most important question to be asking. The question is, what happens when millions of baby boomers are required to begin withdrawing money from the stock market? The price of shares of stocks or mutual funds or bonds, or anything for that matter, goes up as long as there are more buyers than sellers. Between 1990 and the year 2000, the stock market boomed because there were so many 30 to 50-year-old baby boomers entering the stock market, saving for their retirement in their DC pension plans. So, there was a stock market boom. There was a similar boom in the 1970s when baby boomers left home, left college, and began buying their first homes. If you were old enough to remember those years, you may remember the mania over real estate, a mania that was also followed by a panic and a bust when interest rates went over 20%. Interest rates were raised in order to slow down inflation. Inflation caused partially because 75 million baby boomers had entered the job market and now had money to burn. In other words, 75 million people buying anything will cause a boom. The reverse is also true. 75 million people selling anything will cause a bust. It is the basic law of economics, the law of supply and demand. Within the next few years, but most certainly by 2016, if they haven't already figured it out, people will begin to understand that stock markets do not always go up by 20% per year, as they did in the 1990s. Unfortunately, millions of employees will not exit their 401k or IRA plans, or may only exit after it is too late. Millions of baby boomers may not sell early, even though they know the market is crashing, because of government-imposed tax penalties for early withdrawal. So instead of withdrawing, they will stay in the market, diversifying, moving money from one mutual fund to another, looking for the next hyped safe sanctuary. Most people already realize that they are in financial trouble, but still do not realize the full impact of the many flaws of ERISA. When this realization hits critical mass, a panic will occur as people fight desperately to save their retirement and their lives. Unfortunately, all the diversification in the world will not save them from a crash of that magnitude. Warren Buffett, reportedly America's richest and smartest investor, has this to say about diversification. Diversification is a protection against ignorance. It makes very little sense for those that know what they're doing. In other words, if you don't want to diversify, get educated. If you're not financially educated and have no plans on becoming financially educated, then diversify, diversify, diversify. Rich Dad, being more blunt, would have said, if you're financially ignorant, diversify. He did say to me, way back in 1979, one of the many flaws in ERISA is that the law has failed to advise people to get financially educated. President Ford and Congress changed the law, but failed to tell the educational system to provide for the proper financial education, the financial literacy required for people who have DC pension plans. Instead, the politicians have left the job of financial education up to the people of Wall Street. On a more sarcastic note, Rich Dad later said, asking Wall Street to provide financial education is the same as asking a fox to raise your chickens. If the fox is smart, the fox will be patient and raise very fat chickens. The fox works hard to gain the chickens' trust, so he cares for them by providing slick brochures, branch offices, and good-looking salespeople who have been trained to sound like investors. The fox smiles and knows the chickens are happy. They feel safe in their sanctuary. They have a safe, secure job, and they have their money safely entrusted to financially astute people. Then they see the stock market go up and up in the 1990s, and they feel even more intelligent and well-advised. They know their financial planner is looking after them, will make them rich and protect them from the harsh, cruel world outside the chicken coop. But in March of 2000, the world began to change. The tech bubble burst and the stock market began to deflate. Financial planners began to say, "Be patient, invest for the long term, diversify." The chickens began to feel a little more secure. They knew they were doing the financially intelligent thing. They were in it for the long term, they were diversified, and they knew the recovery was right around the corner. September 11th dropped the market, but the market bounced right back. Again, the chickens felt more confident as the market began to climb. Then Enron hit, and suddenly, many very fat chickens from all over America began to cluck loudly from the sanctuary of their securely wired chicken coops. Although they clucked and cackled loudly, the foxes again said, "Be patient, invest for the long term, diversify." One of the reasons the biggest stock market crash in the history of the world did not take place right after the Enron event is because the foxes aren't ready for their chicken dinner yet. They know that these chickens have a few more years to get a little fatter, and they know that, by law, the chickens will have to keep coming to the stock market, buying more mutual funds, and diversifying. The problem is, some of the chickens are getting nervous and are beginning to ask questions. Questions such as the 70-year-old retiree in Miami asked, and are getting the standard pre-programmed financial planner disguised as investor answer: "Don't worry, be happy, buy more, and diversify."